Hello, everyone. Welcome to Squares That Cube, a multidimensional podcast where we discuss and ramble about MTG Cube. My name is Ryan, and I am joined today by my co-hosts Jesse and Alex. Jesse, how are we doing on this lovely Sunday?
So good. So good. Yeah, we're doing good. We're excited to be here.
Excellent, excellent. I'm glad to see that you have a ton of energy on this early morning for you on your... Is this your first day off?
Yep, this is the weekend start. We are alive. We are hype.
Ooh, awesome, awesome. Also, I am always welcomed and always want to say hi to Alex. How are we doing today?
I'm doing good. I definitely don't think I'm as musical as Jesse is here today, but my weekend's ending and his weekend's starting, so maybe there's the difference.
Mm. Oh, man. Different highs, I guess, for each low.
For shame.
And today we are also welcomed by our guest, Chad. Chad, how are you on this lovely Sunday?
What is up, Popper players and also Cube players? I'm doing good, man. It's been a fun weekend, you know, wrapping down. Got to go to work in the morning, which nobody looks forward to, but this should be a nice high point to end the weekend, so I'm happy to be here.
Oh, don't tell me we got a case of the Mondays already. I love some Mondays. Oh... Well, team, I hope that everyone's having a great Sunday. I say, why don't we jump right into it and see who's been cubing. If I'm not mistaken, Alex and both Jesse have had the weekend, or the last week off of cubing. So, Chad, being our guest, what have you been doing for cubing this last week?
Let's see. My local cube just recently introduced a peasant cube to the rotation, so looking forward to do that one on Friday. But as my last draft was my popper cube, we were actually doing one last draft of the previous format before the update goes in. Where it's been a work in progress for a couple weeks now. I have all the cards, they're ready to go in, but we wanted to get one last draft of the old format in, and then the Cali Cube Champs update will be in the cube and it'll be ready to go. So really excited for that. Also managed to fit in a Robo Rosewater cube with one of my local cubers who just printed that out. It was a blast. AI-generated cards are, we'll say open to interpretation. It was fun.
a lot of judge calls.
Yeah, is it more of a judge call? Is it more of like a power level call, I gotta ask?
While drafting, we all kind of agreed that the idea was for it to be fun, and that doesn't necessarily coincide with make sense. So we actually agreed to call a non-magic judge to make all final rulings, and
whoa!
it was an absolute riot. I ended up 3-0-ing with a 7/6 angel that costed like 9 mana, and it had trample and haste, and when it entered play, it got +32/+32.
Oh my god.
and I cheated that into play several times to win a bunch of games, and because I 3-0'd, I got to add my own custom card to the cube. I added a conspiracy called Together Forever, which while you're drafting allows you to mark 2 cards, and throughout your games with that draft deck, anytime you have one of those cards in your hand, you can reveal them to get the other card for free. And anytime you cast one, you cast both. But anytime you lose one, one is countered or one is sacrificed or goes to the graveyard for any reason, you lose both.
What?
Spicy.
Okay.
What I really want to know after hearing this is what in the world AI prompt got typed in that a 9-mana 7/9 hasting trampling +32/+32 angel was the result? What constant?
Oh, did I mention
level...
it was green?
Oh my god.
So somebody green said angel. Made a green Threg test, right? And it's just like, you know,
yep.
Oh, that's crazy.
It was like, how many rhinos are there in Magic? +32/+32, run it.
Right, exactly.
That's got to awesome. Be some awesome games, though, and a lot of fun.
It's pretty wild. I wish I'd have gotten it on camera, because that was a hilarious day.
Yeah, that feels like very similar to the time there was a buddy of mine who had an uncube, and it was literally every unset built like a set cube traditionally was, and having partaken in a nerf war while playing a sub game under the table next to my sub game that was under the table, and having to crawl under someone's legs to sniper style shoot a sniper nerf gun across the room under people's legs. That, yeah, no, I mean, I'm about the silly.
That sounds pretty amazing.
It's kind of like when dinner theater meets cube, right? Like you're quite literally acting out the cube in real time.
It's definitely got a lot of live outside game and in-game actions.
I really hope the next Unset plays on the Universes Beyond theme. Could you imagine like an Unbeyond set where you get to go, you have like Un cards in the 40K universe or Lord of the Rings universe?
Yep, that'd be crazy.
It's like Gandalf the Big Chillin', and he has like 420 toughness or something, you know? It'd be great.
I was gonna say that sounds like a licensing nightmare, unless you're like Disney or somebody. But you know, that does sound like a lot of fun.
You cast the God Emperor, and you just have to sit in your chair and not move, and everyone else does your game for you.
And it's now called the Throne for the rest of the tournament. Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely.
They have to refer to you as that.
I am all about it.
Man.
You definitely had more fun than I did, and he's right. I basically had the week off. Did a couple casual 1v1s with a buddy, but. Had nothing, no real drafts or table reading to do, and nothing exciting happened. So I'm definitely hyped to get back up to Wayward City tomorrow and jam my new revision of my cube. So I'm itching.
Well, very cool. Ryan, you had said you had some cubing you had been doing here this week. What were you up to?
Yes, so we were in the final stretch of LSV's little Discord cube team draft going on here, and we needed to secure 3 wins out of 5 matches, and it came down to Saturday where I promptly was able to 3-0 won some incredibly lucky games with the LSV's cube draft. So I believe, are locked for the top 8. So
yes,
that's
good
awesome.
Good job, bro. Congrats.
Yeah!
Fun fact, LSV is actually from my local card shop. Like, he grew up in my area, so I grew up playing with him. So if you happen to listen, Luis, shout out LSV, one of the greatest all-time players. And next time you're in town, man, come by Adventures. We miss you.
And please don't be upset with the podcast when Ryan crushes you in this event. But, you know, like, otherwise, thanks for listening.
I had some super lucky games. I mulled to 5. I got Thoughtseize to rest and grief and proceeded to win that game strictly off of Bristly. So I probably ordered that card immediately after I got done with that game.
Oh, yikes. Nice.
That sounds
our
brutal.
Landfall Tarmogoyf.
Yeah. Turn 1, it was a Mountain Lotus Petal, and I was like, ah, screw it. I'm just going to jam him and see if we can ride him to victory. And then, can't Thoughtseize the 2-drop.
Not when it's in play. That's not how that works.
Yeah. Well, guys, let's just jump right into it. So, Chad, what can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I've been playing Magic for, God, what is it, 2024? So almost 20 years. I started in, I want to say, 05, maybe 06. Before then. I think it was 03, actually. So yeah, I think we're over 20 years now.
You know what the center block was?
That's Kamigawa, right?
It was Champions, I think.
Yep.
Was my first pre-release. Okay. Although the first pack I ever bought was Odyssey, I think. That was the first pack I ever bought with my own money. I think the first time I had Magic cards was an Ice Age pack. But I didn't actually start playing until a few years after that.
That was a good call. That's a good call.
yeah, I avoided the Ice Age fiasco. But I got into it around Kamigawa era. Got more into it in the Mirrodin era. Affinity has a special place in my heart. I've played it in just about every format. It's been legal since it was in Standard. My best friend got me into it, actually. Best friend Carl, since like 7th grade. Still plays at some of the local card shops. I see him all the time. But he got me into Magic. I took a couple of hiatuses, like many players. You know, I've burnt out, I've sold my collection, I've restarted, rebuilt it after I get the bug a year later. Loved Magic the whole time. Joined content creation streaming. Actually didn't have anything to do with Magic as a streamer. I was a Diablo streamer on Twitch.
Oh, that's really cool.
I built
Diablo or D2?
Diablo 3 primarily.
3. Okay.
I built a pretty successful fan base on Diablo 3. Top 1% for a couple months. I was known for doing 24 to 48 hour stream marathons on every new set or series, like the new seasons for each ladder.
Really?
We would race the bots for the leaderboard spots and try to leaderboard as many classes as we could, me and a couple of friends, before the bot accounts took over and we could never catch back up. But it was a lot of fun. Built some great relationships there. Actually met a couple of other streamers that are now Magic streamers, even though neither of us were when we met, which is really funny. And then kind of got burnt out, admittedly. I was streaming like 5 days a week plus working a full-time job, and I just could not sustain that. And took about a year hiatus and decided that I wanted to come back into content creation, but I wanted something a little more sustainable. So I joined YouTube and I started a Popper channel. Took a couple days to brainstorm some cool names or cool branding. And I landed on Salt and Popper, and I really liked the pun, and I just kind of ran with it. And I went with the Salt Shaker branding and kind of stuck with it. Been going for, what is it, May? So almost 2 years now, I think. And not doing too bad. Lots of organic growth, a lot of positive feedback to the channel. It's been a lot of fun, and I haven't burnt out yet, so I feel pretty good that it's a sustainable pace for me, which is awesome.
That's good. I know content creation and mental health don't have the best relationship.
It's almost inverse.
Yeah, for sure. So it's good to hear that you're in a good place for sure.
Yeah, lots of fun. Grew up in the North California area, specifically Sacramento, capital city. Play at a shop called Adventures in Comics and Games, which is kind of North California famous. Gave birth to the Black Border show, for those old heads that remember that.
Yeah, I do.
Blackborder.com was Avram Oliver of Adventures in Comics and Games. He's my LTG.
And
LSV came out of that shop. He was one of the original Black Border players. Shahar Shenhar learned how to play at Adventures. Some titans have come from that place for sure. Made a lot of cool friends.
Love it. Oh, that's awesome. Got a bit of a legacy you come from for sure.
Definitely had a crossroads. I could have gotten more into it when those guys made their transitions into career players, and I ended up stepping away, and I still regret that. So I'm trying to chase their coattails now.
For sure. Well, it sounds like we've got a pretty good idea of who you are. But let's talk about this cube a little bit. I am curious. I don't recall exactly what made you make the segue from being just a passionate Meriden card slinger to a cube designer.
Sure. So cube was introduced to me by a roommate in college. His name was Jordan. He's still a big cube player in our local cube community. He has his own kind of cube circle and rotation for local cube nights as well. And he introduced cube as a concept to me when we were living together. And at that point, I was still kind of on my competitive Magic kick, back when like DCI ratings were a thing.
Yeah.
And draft and sealed particularly were something that I was very good at a lot of the time. I was, I believe, top 8 in my state in sealed and top 10 for draft at one point in DCI rankings. You know, I just kind of fell in love with cube because as a night owl, it was accessible. You know, I had a roommate that played Magic, so we would just play little sealed pools out of his cube back to back. And then I liked the idea of building themed cubes more so than powered cubes. He had a legacy cube that he was building that was just straight up, you know, power legacy cube, power vintage cube, that kind of stuff. And then I started by designing kind of a meme cube that I called the Sphere, that was the anti-cube.
It was
a collection of the worst possible cards that I could find in Magic, in which you drafted a deck out of the cards that you thought were the worst and or the best. You know, you kind of had to play the odds. And when you sat down, you pass your deck to your opponent and have to play their deck against your deck. And the deck that had the best record at the end of the night was the winner.
Wow.
Yeah,
and it was a lot of fun, and that kind of sparked it for me. I've built a couple cubes since then, but unfortunately, the novelty of that one kind of wore off locally pretty quick.
Yeah,
because at the end of the day, nobody really wants to play with bad cards. You can only cast a Visadrix so many times and have it stay fresh.
Right, no, for sure. And I've experienced something similar. We did a format almost exactly like that. We just didn't have the gall to stick to the bit as hard as you did, so respect. We did it with an actual power cube. So there was lot of lapstick mind twists and moxes and
Yeah, no, we were playing what is it, like the 0/3 Phyrexian artifact for 0, and like it was bad.
Phyrexian Walker.
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Visadrix
was like the big blue bomb in the sphere. It was not a good cube, but it was a lot of fun for a couple of drafts, and that kind of sparked it. Popper Cube specifically came to me, one, because I really liked the format, but the format had been known to me since its inception almost. Jordan and I ran a Popper tournament at our local card shop the year that it became a format on MTGO. So we were kind of in it at the very beginning when like mono black control and you were finishing with corrupt, you know, and that was like the tier one deck. And so the format really appealed to me because it got more people interested. That was at a point where a lot of us were broke college students. You know, nobody could really keep up with standard without, you know, substantial investment or like a bunch of friends to share a card pool with. And so it got a lot of people talking about it. You know, you could build, you know, $5 decks out of the common bin at the local shop and sit down and play Popper. And it was a lot of fun and people got into it. And that kind of kept the buzz going for me. And then I lost it for a little bit. You know, I got into EDH when everybody else did. You know, EDH became a thing, and then Commander kind of took over the Magic sphere after that. Got into CEDH, and then lost a lot of faith in the rules committee. My favorite pet deck that I had a huge investment in got banned and kind of whiffed my entire investment, and I ended up selling out of that and still wanted to play Magic but didn't want to keep up with Standard because it had died at that point. And I didn't trust the rules committee to protect my investment in EDH, so I found Popper as just a safer investment where bans were going to impact me a lot less. The card pool was still really deep, and it was an eternal format, so that nostalgia factor came into play. You know, a lot of older Magic players enjoy Popper just because they get to play with their old cards. They get to take all these cards that were cool when they were learning and play them again because it has enough support. And that's really cool. You know, I kind of love that aspect. And then I just built my entire kind of collection and then brand and then channel around that feeling, just kind of spreading Popper awareness to everybody else. I mean, I think it's a format that doesn't quite get enough love. You know, it's a lot of fun. I think building the Popper Cube was a cool way for me to show Popper to people in my area that wouldn't have normally given it a chance otherwise. You know, Popper has a big negative stigma around it, playing with bad cards, playing with weak cards, playing with cheap cards. This kind of elitist mentality in Magic has taken over. And opening that door with a cube is a lot easier than, say, a Popper constructed deck. So the Popper Cube kind of gave intro to the local Popper scene, and it really started taking it from there. So I've put, I think, 4 years into my Popper Cube now.
Nice.
And it's been a lot of fun. Lots of positive feedback and lots of cool experiences. And it's taken me a lot of places. I mean, this is the second year I'll be in Cali Cube Championships in the main event, voted in by the people.
Congrats!
I was going to say, yeah, that's the perfect segue. So yeah, the reason that we've got you on here today is that we are going to be talking about your list specifically to help give people a primer for the Cali Cube Champs coming up here in a few weeks. So with this, first off, I also love what you were saying about with your playgroup as a way to get people into a new format that they're not normally interested into. Having a cube is a fantastic way to do that. I fully support and agree with that, because just when you have all the cards and you just show up and people can just come and play and all the game pieces are there in one piece, it's just such a barrier breaker for people that wouldn't want to invest the time and the energy to get into something and become invested enough to build a deck and find an archetype that they're interested into. So I love the fact that, like you said, you're using your Popper Cube as a way to get people into playing Popper, because that I think that's a phenomenal way to do it.
Yep.
But going into the cube a little bit deeper here, obviously on your channel, you talk a lot about Popper and what's important in the meta at the moment, what decks are winning, what decks are losing, cards to watch out for. How does that impact the way that you approach designing the Popper Cube then? Are you looking at the Popper format at all and what's winning and losing when you're designing this? Or how does that work for you as somebody who plays a lot of competitive Popper and then also manages a cube like this?
Yeah, so it's actually funny because I use the Popper Cube as a segue into Popper as a format in general, and it's almost a trap because the cube is not even close to representative of the Popper constructed format. I mean, sure, some of the good cards are still good cards, but the format is so dramatically different. And it's really interesting. When I do my like Popper set reviews, for instance, you're right, I focus on constructed and the decks that are winning and the cards that are look out for and that kind of meta. But I almost try purposefully to avoid letting that influence my cube design, because I use my cube to get people into that format. I want it to be very introduction friendly. I also have used it with some after-school programs locally to help teach kids how to play Magic. So I have a couple stipulations building my cube. There are no foreign cards. There are no textless cards. And any altar and or signature is spaced or placed appropriately so that it blocks as little text as possible. I usually try to ask the artist to sign over like only flavor text or only reminder text, that kind of thing. So I want everything to be plain, readable, and understandable. And card selection wise, I try very hard to select cards that embody that idea in Magic. So things, and it helps to have some stipulations in terms of design and power level. So for me specifically, and this is something that I took from another cube designer, which is the kind of quote unquote official Popper Cube community cube, which is they kind of designated each color to having its own specific removal type. So for instance, white is enchantment removal, red is damage based removal, black are the only places you find neg or destroy effects, those kind of things. And it helps kind of sculpt each color's identity and then help you from there sculpt each dual color's identity based on what the removal is, what the speed of each color is, the chase card in each color, those kind of ideas. So when I'm doing set reviews like that, I'm looking for cards that kind of embody their color. A good recent card for that Caverns of Ixalan would be like Petrify is a good example, where it's just like the most pacifism that ever pacifismed.
Okay.
And things kind of that nature. Like Tithing Blade is another really good example of a new card that was a very clear slam dunk into the cube, because it is this very traditional in the sense of kind of an old Magic concept black removal spell, right? It's a sacrifice, it's an edict. Those don't really exist in other colors, so it's very clearly a black card. And I want the cube to be intuitive in that way. To that end, I've actually done what I can to try to design the cube purposefully to be draftable at a full depth of play blind. And I've actually designed my own very specific cube draft aid that you'll see if you go to Cali Cube Champs, which are in pack one of all of the sets of three packs for each drafter. They get this little primer card, and that shows them the supported archetype in each two color combination, the quote unquote identity of each mono color, the removal type of each mono color, and then the seeding algorithm for the actual packs so that anyone who wants to attempt to read signals can.
Very cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. So there's a lot of like,
that's ingenious.
There's a very high level thought process to making a very simple cube, I guess is the best way to put it. I want the cube to draft very simply, but play very deep.
Okay. I like where your head's at.
So it sounds like then that you've taken, you know, obviously looking at your list, and I'm actually doing a few comparisons here in the background that I'm sure we'll get into here in just a little bit. But taking a look at this list, I mean, it sounds like you've taken some of the design goals from the official Popper Cube, which is definitely something we have to point out that's out there as well. As we talk about the Popper Cubes, is the fact that there's a group of people that curate, you know, that official list out there. And a lot of people, when they think Popper Cube, they get a very, you know, specific mm-hmm. pool of cards in mind just because that list exists. Yeah. Did you use that as a starting place then for your list when you were initially building your cube, or was it just kind of more of a tool that you use when designing your list from scratch?
Yeah, so I had a couple of things. So there were two Popper Cubes that I very strongly took influence from, and the official quote unquote Popper Cube was one of them. And I think their community channel in Discord is a hugely beneficial space, even as a non-Popper Cube creator, because they've done a couple of things that we can talk about that make things very nice for cube curators. And then the second one was Andrea Mingucci's Popper Cube, which is another very big, very popular Popper Cube. Now, if you look at his versus mine, it looks almost nothing alike. But
yep.
But there is
very different.
Yes, but you can in that way see how it influenced me, because his is a very specific synergy based cube. It's a very mm-hmm. tribal slash kindred matters cube. It's it follows the Popper band list. You know, these are all specific stipulations that he chose to have in place for his cube.
Yes,
that I didn't necessarily agree with. So when I looked through his cube, I tried to impose my own stipulations on his card choice and used that as a starting point. And it didn't give me a ton of cards, but it showed me a lot of what most people would consider staples that I could almost immediately rule out of contention. And that opened a lot of pathways into what I want the white identity to be, you know, what I want the Rakdos color combination to play like. It gave me a lot of guidance in terms of, you know, this is a really cool way to do a popper cube, but it's not how I want to do mine. So it showed me a path to avoid, which is just as helpful as having something to follow.
That's very, very cool.
As far as the popper cube channel's inspiration, it wasn't a carbon copy when I started, but I did use theirs as a grounding point because I agreed with a lot of their design choices. There are strong opinions to some of their card selections that I either agree or disagree with. And so there are definitely variations, and there are some very specific design choices that differ between our two philosophies. However, I am pretty active in their community. I'm not hugely active because, you know, I have other stuff to do. But over time, being involved in that community, a couple of my ideas have actually made it to the main cube. So what used to be more glaring differences actually became more overlapped as my influence on their card selection also came to light. But what I really value about that community, less so than maybe as a direct guideline, is their voting system. So for those of you who don't know, they have a list of every single popper legal card in the entirety of Magic that anyone in that community can hop onto their website and vote yes or no on. And they have an entire spreadsheet of the total community ratings of every card in terms of cube eligibility and total thought, as in positive or negative sentiment on whether or not people like it, think it should make it, think it's good enough, think it's bad enough, that kind of thing.
No way.
And that resource has been massively helpful when I have to make my own updates, because obviously they do like a quick hits and a primer, and they post their own updates, and, you know, I may or may not agree with a lot of their choices, but what is majorly beneficial is looking at those results, because even if they don't mention a specific card, I can go look at what the total community thinks of that card and use that to help guide my own updates or my own considerations. So it really does a great job of kind of crowdsourcing, you know, a way of narrowing down whole sets of cards to maybe the top 10 cards that I should consider looking at for the cube, that kind of thing. So it does a lot of the legwork, and I really, really like that for that community.
That's actually... I really like that a lot. I had no idea that even existed. Alex, do you use that as well?
I definitely take a look at it whenever that comes out, and I do vote on that as well. I was going to say, I will definitely link the website for the official Popper Cube in the show notes, because it is a fantastic resource for anybody who's interested in creating their own Popper Cube.
Yep.
As well. And I was going to say, it's funny, because you mentioned the list that you take a look at. I mean, Meguchi's list and yours are actually two of the ones that I pay pretty close attention to whenever I'm making updates to mine and taking a look for inspiration and ideas. And so... those are two of the exact same places that I'm looking when I'm, you know, making adjustments as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah, very useful resources. I think they're very two distinctly different versions of a popper cube, which act as like very specific signposts of kind of where you want to be or what direction you want to take it when you build your own. I aimed to be kind of in the middle, maybe skewed a little bit towards the popper cube version more than Andrea's version, but it's definitely nice to have that kind of guidance when you're starting from nothing. And I think for anyone who's getting interested in building a cube in general, I would always recommend you start not from scratch. You know, if you want a 360 cube, a 450 cube, a 560 cube, a 680 cube, whatever, not that those are very common, I always suggest that people start with someone else's list, look through it, figure out what they agree with, what they disagree with, and then freely make choices from there, because that makes it a lot easier. It can be very overwhelming for a new creator to be like, well, how do I pick 360 cards from the entirety of Magic? You know, but when you say here, you know, if you want to make a modern cube, look at this list. Does this look like modern should feel to you? And if the answer is no, okay, look at this list. Does this one look like modern should feel to you? Yeah, okay, cool. Now you have a starting point. You can start to make tweaks. You can start to make it your own.
used it as an outliner, a stencil almost.
Exactly. And for me, at least, I like to look at other creators or other available community cubes and then impose my own stipulation, right? So obviously the card versions are going to differ because of my cube, but also the design philosophy. You know, I want it to be very easy to draft. I want it to still have that depth of play. So I'm okay with higher power level cards that other people might deem as a little more feels bad or harder to play around or harder to play against. I'm okay with that because it does allow those higher skill players to outplay people or find creative lines or find creative interactions that might not be face level. So while it drafts very face level, it still plays very deep. I like that kind of that disparity. And that's
a good place.
It's not always a philosophy that's shared by everyone. So it's cool to have references. It's cool to have somewhere to start, you know, a jumping point, a ground base, a home base, as it were, to start as a reference. But I always say you should make it your own.
No, for sure. Yeah, the personality of Cube is, I think, what we all agree is one of our favorite things about it.
Yeah.
The customization, the ability to put a little of yourself in it. But speaking on these archetypes, I mean, it sounds like you have literally a cheat sheet at the front of your packs. But for the listeners at home, what are these archetypes?
So it is a cheat sheet that you can look at because I do think that the cube is best drafted blind. But for those who don't want to draft it blind, they are also listed. At least the two color archetypes are on the Cube Cobra overview. So yep. I've provided those two colors. I tried to make them as, we'll call it stereotypical to those two color combinations as you can think. You know, if you conceptualize Magic's colors, white is either very aggressive or very controlling. Red is lots of small, fast creatures. Sometimes it's making tokens. A lot of time it's using burn. Black is lots of hard removal, lots of like sacrifice things are going on, morbid triggers, that kind of thing. Green is a very ramp heavy format, but it also has lots of like big dudes in it that pay off that ramp. And then blue is a very like tempo and permission focused, right? So when I look at white blue, I gave it the flicker archetype, which, you know, makes sense when you look at the controlling side of white and the tempo side of blue. White black was life drain. You know, it plays off the control elements of both of those things. So it's using things like extort, for instance, as one of its win conditions. White green is 1/1 counters. White red is like a tokeny aggro type thing, like a go wide style aggro deck. Blue black is an ETB value deck. Let's see. Blue green is a tempo deck. Now that's a little bit more of like a personal play on Simic. There are certainly archetypes within Simic that play into tempo, and there are certainly archetypes in Simic that don't play into a tempo style. I think tempo is probably the most archetypal of blue-green's mechanics. I grew up playing in like Time Spiral, Ravnica standard, you know, lots of Call of the Herds, Repeals, Remand, that kind of era.
Temporal Spring.
Yeah, Temporal Spring. Great call. And so I wanted blue-green to kind of feel like that, because that's what feels like Simic to me, so that's what plays Simic. Is and always has been Spell Slingers, so it's a Spells Matter deck. Black-green is like a Sacrifice and Reanimator-style graveyard deck. Black-red is like Rakdos, throw your dudes at them, Sacrifice aggro, so it's like a go-for-broke aggro with a Sacrifice sub-theme for value. Things like Unearth, what is it, Bogarden Dragonheart.
Oh my gosh, I remember that card.
Things like that. And then red-green is as red-green as it gets. It's just straight-up Girl Stompy. So I would say they favor more of the Ravnica guild archetypes more than like the Strixhaven guild archetypes, for instance. But that's definitely the identity that I kind of went with because those feel the most traditional to me. And like I said, I kind of use this as a way to introduce people, not just to Pauper, but those who are interested in learning kind of higher level beginner Magic skills, card evaluation, deck building, things like that. So I want this to be very stereotypical in that aspect as well. I want it to teach them the color identities of Magic as a whole. and I feel like those choices do it. In terms of monocolor identities, there's a little bit of variation, but white is kind of the traditional white weenie. Mono blue is basically blue skies, which for anyone that drafted a lot of like the Zendikar era is very familiar with, like blue-white skies, for instance. That's been a limited archetype for ages. Mono black is a sacrifice deck. Mono red is burn, and mono green is a ramp deck, and they all kind of have their own removal types. So there's a lot of what I would consider core values of Magic and Magic colors built into the cube. That's kind of how I look at it.
I think it makes a lot of sense for your guilds to be so almost, well, I guess you could use the word cliche, but if your intention is to make sure that you're reflecting just the base understanding of a color's design,
mm-hmm.
making sure the guilds do the same thing you have in the single colors. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I like this. I love it.
And I try very hard to make sure that each color has as even a time as it can as a support color to its side archetypes and a dominant color in its side archetypes. So for instance, something that has since been added to the Popper Cube since I kind of brought it up in the discussion and some people started to agree with me and it's since been changed and added, was that I felt burn or red in general was a support color in almost every archetype that it was in. It was never the primary color. It never had all the right stuff to do it by itself. It was always just I have this white aggro deck, but I also have a couple of these decent red cards, so I'll fill my white aggro deck with red cards and call it Boros aggro. And I didn't quite like that balance. I thought every color should have a couple archetypes it's leading in and a couple archetypes it's following in. And that led to kind of reintroducing mono red as a burn archetype, adding cards back in such as Fire Blast that really give burn a very strong burn feeling. And making sure that in some of those more aggressive archetypes, like the Rakdos set or like those Boros decks, that red can be a lead color. Adding cards in like Plated Geopede, for instance, was a really instrumental card for giving red back its aggro identity, making it that deck again. So things like that are just kind of philosophies and design perspectives that I try to keep in mind when I'm looking at new cards versus making updates.
I think that's really cool that you're able to kind of look keep them on track with their archetypes in that kind of theme. I also love your coordination with the numbers, if I may. Can I ask, is there a particular reason why they're perfectly balanced at 65 each for each color pie, or was that something that you set your mind at, or could you jump into that for a little bit?
The color pie, that was partially due to the reference point at which I chose, although it has changed a few times since then. I think originally it was 60 of each color, and it since crept up to 65. It has always been about seeding the packs and making sure that there's an even-ish average colored spread. So I knew from the get-go that I didn't want to just shuffle all the cards together and have people grab 15 of each card. I wanted to seed the packs to make it as true and even draft experience as possible.
Got it.
And so I always knew that that meant that the colors needed to be broken up into even integers, because otherwise it wouldn't be able to be split evenly amongst the packs.
Right.
And that was really a kind of a good guide, was that since I knew I wanted to use this seeding algorithm of making sure that things are averaged out, it made it, you know, so making these nice round numbers, you know, 65 of each color, 50 multicolor, 30 colorless, 45 lands, really kind of lended itself to the size cube I wanted, because I wanted 450 very specifically. It is worth noting that when I created my cube, I did use the original Popper cube as a jumping point, as a reference point, but their cube was still 421, I think. It was not a 450 card cube. So they have since upped their cube to 450, and it's gotten more similar again. So we've definitely traded off looking more and less similar in phases.
And I know that was a big deal for a lot of people in the Popper Cube community when they made that switch too, because it was that same first number for a very long time before they recently bumped it up. Yeah, and I know there were definitely some people that had some opinions on that when that happened.
Yeah.
So.
And really? Huge opinions. So I made my cube 450 cards from the jump very intentionally, because I wanted it to be 450, not 360 and not 540. 450 was the right number for me for two reasons, and it was all about the number of players I wanted to support at any given cube night. I wanted to be able to play my cube regardless of who showed up to its fullest capacity. So 450 is the right number for me because it supports up to a five man sealed. And then once you crack into six, you can immediately start drafting. And that's always the right number.
Man. Gotcha.
So 450 was very intentional for me. And I really like that number. I think it's the right number for most cubes, to be honest. That may be an unpopular opinion, but...
No, I was going to say, I think you just made Ryan very happy because I'm pretty sure that's exactly where his list is sitting at the moment. Mm-hmm. So he's very much a numbers guy.
I also very specifically like 450 cubes for 8-man drafts because it gives you about a 22% variance in between drafts. And I am not a fan of every card in the cube being in every draft because then the same archetypes in the same iterations are always available. Having about a 20% variance gives archetypes new life. It makes it so that you could draft the exact same deck 4 drafts in a row and it'll never look the same. And I like that very much. I think that keeping the cube fresh for the draft experience is very important for the longevity of the cube.
Chad, you and I became best friends.
See, it's funny because I agree with you on the I love the variance as well, but I tend to push things like my popper list is currently up at 540 at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I've got some similar reasons for that, which is first, I like that variance and it does add a little bit more variance, which sometimes is good, sometimes is bad. But for like our cube nights, we sometimes have that awkward number where we get 10, 11, 12 people, where we have enough to fire one cube, but we don't really have enough to yet fire that second cube. And so the reason why I specifically keep both my popper cube and my unpowered vintage cube at the 540 numbers is for those 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, you know, people when we get over an 8-man pod, it adds that variety. But I love what you're saying, where like if you have a play group and there's fewer people that come, you know, that sealed aspect on 5 players until you get to your perfect 6 for a team draft, or if you guys decide you want to fire a regular draft on 6, then that's awesome with the numbers. That's fantastic.
And I do think that in general 12 is too many for a single draft pod, so that might be unpopular. I just think 540 is too many for a rotation.
It definitely is. And so if we get to that 540 number, we tend to do a 2 pods of 6.
Exactly.
If we get up to that, which is where we split it in half.
So but you're saying you could have a 450 card cube and it would work functionally exactly the same way.
The downside there is you couldn't actually support 2 sixes.
I would also touch just slightly on the difference in variance between a 540 cube and a 450 cube for an 8-man pod. So I think it's pretty universally agreed that every pod should be 8 players, ideally, right? So when you take the extra step from that like 22% variance of a 450 card draft for an 8-man pod and you add it to almost a 45% variance for 12-man cube with an 8-man pod, it's significantly different in draft experience, which is great from a variance perspective. But for me, I run into trouble with an inflated cube of that number in terms of core support for the identities of the archetypes. When you run a 20% variance, you might not have the best card for your archetype, but most of the heavy hitting support or fence post cards for your archetype will be in the draft. When you get to a 540, you run the risk of just like straight up not having any cards for your archetype available to you on that one draft. And I just think that that's a little bit of a feel bad moment in the draft. And admittedly, I'm okay with feel bad moments in play, but I don't want feel bad moments in the draft.
Like your deck didn't come together in your pack 3.
Exactly.
That feeling of like you just knowing it's dreadful.
I think I'm kind of in the opposite camp. Not that I don't think what you're saying breeds a healthy environment as well, but I think I value they're not coming together sometimes because I feel like you shouldn't be moving into pack 3 without a deck functioning. Like you shouldn't be, oh God, please let pack 3 have it. And you want it statistically to always be there. I would have already pivoted. Like I would have drafted something that was there. And that's what I like about my 540 is that I want there to be misses and I want you to notice it. And when you don't, you get punished.
And so that's an excellent point. I just balance that a little bit differently. So because Popper, its greatest restriction is its mana base, I balance those type of hit or miss situations or force pivots when your deck is not coming together by balancing the amount of dual color support in the cube. So I force that type of pivot, that force, that sense of like, you know, my deck just didn't come together by denying reliable mana fixing to any one given color combination. So while there are a very significant number of dual lands fluctuating, the variance provides it so that you run the risk of not having dual lands for your specific archetype available to you.
Like they just not being available in the draft.
Yeah, like they just might not be there. There's only three of each dual color. Now, there are definitely some flex ones like the Thriving Lands or the Gates, but in general, the dedicated lands, the best lands, the bounce lands, for instance, are probably the best dual lands of all time. I think most people can agree with that in terms of Pauper, for Pauper Cube. I mean, they are one of the only Pauper legal lands that are played in cubes in the vintage level, you know?
yeah.
So the fact that that card just may never come is definitely the limiting factor in terms of what archetype you can or how risky you can draft a specific archetype in my cube. I limit that through the lands. So I would rather you have the pieces to most of what you need, but not everything, and have to risk it for the land and take that risk. And if you miss, you miss, and you just have a less consistent deck, but it still might function, versus a deck that never comes together, but you might have very good signals for it in pack one. Because I don't want to teach someone how to read signals in a seeded cube and then have those signals be misleading. That feels very disingenuous to the drafter and a very negative experience. I would rather the draft be fairly rewarding and fairly forgiving, but the ability to pivot for those more experienced drafters, the ones reading the signals, the one who are high picking those lands, right? I would rather the draft experience be very rewarding to more experienced drafters while still being passable to brand new drafters. That's part of that whole intro.
You're looking for something between the checkers and chess experience.
Exactly.
No experience.
Mm-hmm. And you know,
not beginner friendly, obviously.
Totally agree that that is attainable in a 540 cube, right? That level of variance can be very healthy. I struggle in Pauper specifically because there's not a whole lot of card redundancy. There is some, but when you run the risk of like there being very specific signpost cards to individual archetypes that are miles better than the next best flagpost card, for instance, you know, Capsize is a fantastic blue card for like the tempo or Spellslinger archetypes. But the next best blue card is probably like Counterspell, right? Which is still very good card, but it is not a win condition.
Yeah, it does not win you the game like Capsize.
Exactly. Can. And so while Capsize won't be in every draft, I would like for the drafts that Capsize is in, for the people who are trying to put together Spellslinger deck, if nobody else is picking red or blue cards, for the deck to come together for them, that kind of thing. I don't want you to be able to, I don't want you to be able to snap pick, Capsize, pick one, pack one, and always have the deck. That's just not going to happen with the amount of lands that fluctuate in my drafts. But for the times it comes together, I want you to not have to rely on like always opening that Capsize in pack three, you know, and it just never being there 40% of the time.
Well, we've definitely revealed yet again that different strokes are just the flavor, the variety of spice of life type energy that Cube's about is one of the beautiful things of it, for sure.
Yeah.
How different we go about this, and both of us have had what sounds like I can verify from my play experience with the group's drafting mine that they're kind of in love with it, which I love to hear. It definitely makes my insides all warm and fuzzy, and obviously you've had similar praise, and looking at your list, I'm excited to play it, so...
Yeah, I will say that Murmuring Mystic is a pretty close number two to Capsize, and it might be just as good. So
making those,
I was gonna say Murmuring Mystic,
is pretty nice.
Army in a Can is probably my favorite single favorite archetype. Period. So I do like that card. Big fan.
Yeah,
we have actually touched on a lot of the questions we would normally ask in a little bit of a non-standard way. You know, we talked a lot about the archetypes and the strategies and what players should watch for, and how your cube's drafted. So very specifically, I guess I would ask, do you have any kind of specific advice you would give to first-time drafters of your cube?
Yeah, so in general, I would say in my cube, maybe more so than other cubes, follow the lands. The land support that you are able to draft, even on the first rotation of like wheeling a dual land, is a huge indication of the archetype that is open. I will also say, for those that are a little bit more risky and want to play like the piles of good stuff cards, five color good stuff is almost like hard stop excluded from my cube. You will be exceptionally risky if you try to pull that off. Now, I'm not saying it can't come together, right? If you see four thriving lands and you're like first picking them every time, you can pull together a five color pile. But it will largely roll over to any of the aggro archetypes. They're designed to punish a deck that plays like tap land. Mm-hmm. In terms of archetypal support, three color decks do come together. They're often the most powerful. But again, it's very much at the whim of the lands that you receive. So yeah, follow the lands is probably the most succinct advice I can give to new drafters of my cube. Outside of that, identify the chase cards of each color. There is one to two substantially more powerful cards in every single color. And if you get one, that should almost certainly help define your final deck. For instance, White's is Guardian of the Guild Pact. Black's is Pestilence or Cryptrat. Capsize Murmuring Mystic are very big blue bombs. As I kind of mentioned earlier, is Fire Blast. There's also Wildfire Elemental, which is a massive red card if you can find it. And then in green, the best green card is actually not a green card, which is kind of funny. It's not very intuitive, but the best green card is Ulamog's Crusher. So
the 8/8.
Yeah, definitely. Although yeah. I will say Ivy Lane Denizen is a great card in green for this cube. And it's sort of low-key for how impactful it is. I will answer this question as I usually get it, and it's not given on the key cards. There are infinite combos, but none of them will win you the game on the turn you do them, outside of like making a Carrion Feeder massive and attacking and hoping they don't have a blocker or a kill spell. So there is no just I win button in this cube. A lot of it comes down to combat or misplaying or a very crucial combat trick or counterspell. So play it accordingly and follow the lands and you'll be just fine.
Yes, follow the yellow land road.
Yes, definitely.
Hey, Chad, what are your expectations out of the upcoming event from Cali Cube Jams?
Yeah, so this year I'm really excited. So I mentioned that this is a repeat year for me in the featured cube area. And I was a part of the last one. I actually top eighted the last one and made the final table, which was super, super excited. So I'm hoping to double up that experience. I went into the last one with literally having drafted anything but my Popper Cube for like 3 years and somehow made it to the final table through every cube I drafted except my own.
No way, really?
Yeah. Yeah, I qualified. So I've drafted three cubes in the first three rounds of day one to qualify for day two. And I 2-1'd my cube, didn't make it. 3-0'd the mono blue cube called the Bloob, made it, qualified for day two right there. And then 2-0-1 on a draw to time. The third cube, which also ended up qualifying me for day two. So I qualified for day two on every cube that wasn't mine, which was kind of hilarious. It would be really cool to double up and make the top eight table again. That would be awesome. I would like very much not to scrub out in round one of the top eight this time. Because as I mentioned, I hadn't really drafted anything but my Popper Cube for like 3 years preempting that event. I have done a lot more variants of cubing since then in preparation for this event. So really hoping for another top eight finish.
Got a lot more experience in other variants.
Yes. And I'm honestly really looking forward to drafting Aqua's Powered Cube, because that was something that he offered me a seat at last time and it just didn't work out timing wise. I ended up drafting Joe's Chaos Cube after hours instead of the Powered Cube. And I still want to play with it. So I'm hoping that I get to play that with him. And looking forward to a lot of the theme cubes this year. Last year, there weren't categories like that. It was just kind of cube in general. And, you know, any and all were faced against each other. Joe did a great job of doing the voting of kind of like cube versus like cube, theme cube versus theme cube, but they weren't specific categories like they were this year. And a lot of the category, or a lot of the themed cubes rather, this year look really, really exciting. So I have no idea how I'm going to split my time and get all the cubes in that I want to draft, but I'm going to try.
Yeah, no, we got our hands full trying to see everything for sure.
Yeah.
Well, have you had an opportunity to draft any of the cubes that are going to be there this year from the selection before? I know, like you said, you were there last year, and I think a couple of these cubes were also there last year. But how familiar are you with some of these lists that are going to be there?
Yeah, so I think my cube is one of, I think it was three cubes for the original 12 that were going to be. It's now expanded to 14, and I think that's increased the repeat cubes to 5. But there aren't a ton of overlaps between last year's and this year's, although I did get to draft a lot of the cubes that are returning. So like Tyler Pug's Jun cube, for instance, I've drafted that a couple of times. A lot of fun. I almost got a chance to draft that with him at MXP San Francisco this just a couple weeks ago. Unfortunately, the timing didn't work out. I was in a Popper Constructed event when he fired, but I did get to swing by and check out the 3-0 deck, and it was disgusting. So anyone drafting that Jun cube, there are some absolutely ridiculous monocolor decks. So I would encourage you not to be distracted by the fact that it is a Jun cube. And sometimes, you know, the mono red deck is the right deck. Apart from that, I have drafted the original quote unquote Raveyard cube. I know that's not the specific cube that is going to be there this year. It's going to be, I think it's Max Z's Raveyard Cube, which is the second graveyard-themed cube. So I haven't drafted his, but I have drafted kind of its predecessor. And let's see, I have drafted the 1-1 cube before. That was actually the cube that I 2-0-1 drew in round 3 of day 1 to qualify for day 2 last year. So I've played a few of them. But looking forward to a lot of the new themed cubes that I haven't had a chance to play. Definitely want to play Austin's Iganjo Drift. That deck, or that cube rather, looks awesome.
Looks like a lot of fun and flavor for sure.
Yeah, and I think there are going to be some fun cubes. There's a couple of peasant cubes in the top 7 now. I think one or two of them made it. I don't recall off the top of my head. I know one of them did. I don't remember if the second one made the cut or not.
I think there are two at this point. I know the big discard energy one made it. Yeah. And I think that one of the Golden Gate peasant cubes has now made it as well, if I'm not mistaken.
They may have been in seventh then, yeah.
Yeah, I think that they were right there on the cusp is my remembrance. And but I also I've only been paying so close of attention to that, so I could be incorrect.
And then I've drafted Joe's Chaos Cube a couple of times now. He actually was kind enough to pick up the CubeCon poster from last year's CubeCon, the cube map.
Oh!
I purchased one even though I wasn't attending, and since I knew Joe was going to be there, I asked if he would be nice enough to pick it up and bring it home for me. And so I took a Saturday and I drove down to Sebastopol, which is nearby, but the event this year, and met up at a coffee shop and jammed another session of his Chaos Cube and grabbed that poster from him, which was super cool. So I've drafted After Hours, his Chaos Cube, a couple of times at last year. So a lot of fun. I don't know if I still hold it, but last year I did set the record for the most number of Cogwork Librarians cashed in Joe's Chaos Cube.
Okay, and what was that record?
It was miles more than the next highest at that time. I honestly don't remember. There's a picture of it actually in his Discord that I can probably find with the exact number. But if I recall correctly, it was at least 8.
Oh my god.
That's my new dream, is I just want to like play one of the cubes, everybody starts with a Cogwork Librarian or something, and amass 7 of them, and then when pack 3 comes, just take the entire pack and pass Cogwork Librarians. Just like, sorry.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what I did.
That is beautiful.
I love it.
I amassed them until pack 3, and then I think I traded all of them in for like the second half of pack 3. But yeah, that set the record. I don't know if I still hold it or not. I'm sure Joe would know. But yeah, that was a lot of fun. Cool memories. I even left a signed Sultan Popper playmat in his playmat collection for the Chaos Cube table. So yeah, lots of cool memories. Had a blast last year. Really excited to go back. And really excited to see all the support he's gotten. I mean, selling out, then expanding the more tickets, then selling out, then expanding, then getting more tickets and capping the venue is huge. So I mean, you know, next year we might even have to go to a new venue, which would be hilarious. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, we're glad to have played a part in helping getting the word out. So excited to get up and get down there, I guess it is, and see Joe again and play some of these awesome cubes.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. Really excited.
Well, Chad, that leads us to the perfect outro. How can people get a hold of you for future contact?
Yeah, so you can find me on Discord. I'm in a ton of the Cube community Discords. You can at me at Salt and Popper on Twitter, and I have a full Popper-focused YouTube channel. I do have a vlog up on the channel of last year's Cali Cube Champs, so if you do want to check that out and see what that looked like, a short interview with the winner at the end, that's up on my channel at Salt and Popper on YouTube. And yeah, that's me.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming and hanging out with us today.
Yeah, thanks so much. Really excited for the event and can't wait to see the other cubes that you guys are going to spotlight. It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we've got a couple more episodes coming up where we'll be doing that. And we tried to, again, to the cube curators that we couldn't get as many of you on the episodes as we could. And so, again, I'll apologize. Here live on air that we did the best we could, but you know, we're only one podcast and there were, you know, first there were 12 cubes and then there were 14. So,
and you guys had a line out the door of people that wanted to be on here. So
it makes me feel so guilty. Like I said, I wish we could do more, but again, I am one editor with one amount of time I can devote each week to editing podcasts. And so doing additional podcasts were sadly just not an option.
Yeah,
do
more. Again, geez.
I know. Right. Just poke them and say, yeah, do more. So
incredibly grateful for everyone who wants to come on, though, nonetheless.
Yes, very much so. Well, I think it's time to move on a little bit here, though. Let's go into our event shout outs for the week. And we do have quite a bit to go over this week, so I'll try to make this as quick as I can. We will start with the three that we've been calling out here for a minute. The first with the Cali Cube Champs, that the event is still sold out for June 1st and 2nd. The wait list is still available for anybody interested in the Discord server for the event, which can be found in the show notes to this episode. Next, the Boston Cube Party coming up on the 22nd and the 23rd of June. $65 for tickets. Tickets for that event are still available. Checked on that this week, and so they still have a few places left for anybody interested in getting to that event, that they are starting to get close to being sold out, but they are not quite there yet. Reminder for people that ticket sales for KubeCon Madison, Wisconsin are going to be coming up here, starting with the GameholdCon tickets that start on May 24th. And the actual KubeCon tickets go on sale June 15th. My understanding is there are quite a few tickets for the GameholdCon, so if you want to wait to get that ticket until after you get your KubeCon ticket, you certainly can. But I did want to just make sure people were available when those start dates began. The Steel City Cube event, July 20th and 21st in Coraopolis. But that event is currently sold out. I believe that there may be a waitlist on a Discord server for that one as well, but I do not have a link to that one currently. Last but not least, we did have one new event that got announced this week. Tickets are now available for the barbecue event at Mana Vault Games in Madison, Wisconsin. That's going to be June 15th as a 64-player event with an entry fee of $75. They're saying the prize payouts for that event are going to be up to $2,500, and so it's going to be a pretty big event going on there. Tickets can be purchased at the Mana Vault Games website, which is linked in the show notes to this event. And that will end my rant of all the Cube events. So thanks, everybody, for listening.
I have one more for
Ryan,
you that isn't on your
list.
Oh,
you've got what? Yeah, let's do it. What do you know about?
Yeah, so June, I want to say it's 27th, 28th, and 29th is... Okay. 28th, 29th, and 30th of June is MagicCon Amsterdam. I will be there for any UK listeners that want to say hi. I'll be playing Popper in the Popper Cup. But there is a host of international cube creators that have created something of a community called the Cube Corner at MagicCon. There'll be a couple panels talking about cube design that they'll be a part of, but they will be hosting cube drafts pretty much all weekend at MagicCon. So anyone attending that wants to jam some cube with some international cube creators will be welcome to join. They have a Discord community for signups. I think it's free entry right now, but they're talking about getting a table in the event hall to draft at. So more on that to follow.
Yeah, very cool. If you can definitely send me the link to that Discord server, or I would love to put that in the show notes as well for people to access that.
Yeah, I got you.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Again, there's, you know, as everyone's been saying, this really has been the renaissance of cube events, and we're happy to keep calling them out as we can as the list keeps getting longer, and depending on, you know, how many of them are going on at that time, but there's definitely a lot of them happening. So, Ryan, do you want to take us out here for the end of the episode?
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you for joining us for today's discussion. This show has an email, which is squaresthatcube@gmail.com, where you can reach out to us with feedback about this episode or suggestions for content you may have. You can also always find us on the PNW Cube Drafts Facebook group as well. We are always looking for more questions to get the debate started, so please feel free to send those in. And with that, everyone, I hope everyone has a phenomenal Sunday!
Good luck in your leagues, and goodbye forever, unless we see you next time.
Hi, everybody.
Oh, I'm sure we'll see you again.
Have a good week, everybody.